live from the FMT Insurance Studios of Talk Radio 92.3 and AM 760. This is Real News
with Mr. Henry and Nick Crawford.
Join the conversation on the Crown Plaza call-in line, 865-888-TALK.
Welcome back to Real News, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Mr. Henry. Nick Crawford sitting beside me. Ross, push some buttons running the board back there. Let's go right now to our fantastic guest, Jim Bavard. He's the author of 10 books, including Public Policy, Hooligan, Attention, Deficit, Democracy, The Bush Betrayal, and Lost Rights, The Destruction of American Liberty. He's written for the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Playboy, Washington Post, New Republic, Reader's Digest, many other publications, and his books have been translated into Spanish, Arabic, Japanese, Korean. He's a member of the USA Today Board of Contributors and a frequent contributor to The Hill, contributing editor of American Conservative and regular contributor through the Future of Freedom magazine. Suffice it to say, this man knows his stuff. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, sir.
Hey, thanks so much for having me back on.
And I want to obviously start with this new article you penned for Mises. On Veterans Day, remember the lies that filled military cemeteries. And I got to tell you, sir, from the onset, that could seem like a fairly controversial headline to at least a few that don't give it the due justice to actually get into the meat of the article. And correct me in my improper terminology here, but if I'm trying to figure it out, it seems like there's this underlying theme throughout the piece of sort of the juxtaposition that world leaders or American leaders are placed in sometimes to honor our veterans, but at the same time, in honoring them the way that we honor them on the day and through the wars that we honor them with, it seems that we're honoring freedom by taking freedom away in some aspects. Am I wrong there?
Well, it's always dangerous to put politicians on a pedestal. Mm-hmm. It's always dangerous to encourage Americans or anybody else to practically grovel at the feet of politicians as if they're going to save us, because most of the time they aren't. But it's especially bad on Veterans Day to hear people praising politicians as great leaders, as statesmen. It's the politicians' lies who have filled up the military cemeteries, because going back 100 years, one brazen lie after another by presidents and others in presidents' tools have dragged us into a lot of wars that we never should have gotten into, and left a lot of Americans dead and maimed with PTSD or worse. Simply because the politicians chose not to tell the truth.
Hmm. Now, in the article here, you say that, and just to bring up sort of one example, and there's a multitude of examples of exactly what you're talking about, but in particular, after Woodrow Wilson nearly won his reelection in 1916 based on his campaign slogan, "He kept us out of war," Wilson pulled America into the war because, quote, "the world must be made safe for democracy." Wilson acted as if Congress' declaration of war against Germany also declared war on the Constitution. The Constitution itself. Now, we could talk all day long about how the Afghani people and Iraqi people are affected, but this, in particular, the Wilson reference for me, really brought it home, because it was, I don't want to go too far to the rims here, a little bit Lincoln-esque in attacking the Constitution and constitutional rights of Americans. Can you expound upon that a little bit, what you meant by that Wilson reference?
Well, you know, it's always happy to hear someone who understands Lincoln. But that's part of the benefit of doing a show in Tennessee. President Wilson acted like an absolute dictator in so many ways. He was blunt in destroying freedom of the speech. He was in favor of roundups of practically all the German Americans. There were all kinds of crackdowns, and there was a massive army of informants that the U.S. government set loose. And anybody who made any criticism of the war effort in 1918 could be pulled in and charged. And for him to sell that war as a triumph of high ideals, at the same time, he's destroying freedom at home. Mm-hmm. And there were so many different lies that war was built upon. If you look at how he sold it initially, he was signaling that there wouldn't need to be a draft, that America would just kind of signal it was going in and the Germans would roll over. Well, you know, Wilson had no idea what the hell was going on in the battlefield in Europe. He was unaware that the French were basically ready to give up on the war, that the British were looking for someone else to do their fighting for him. Quite a novelty there, and that that the U.S. was stepping into a Western Front that was collapsing, and there were so many other things that the U.S. government did during that war that ravaged this country there were Spanish, you know, the Spanish flu was spread massively by U.S. Shifting troops around. And so that's an extra 500,000 Americans dead, which we're not supposed to think about in Veterans Day. Instead, we're supposed to be so happy that the war ended. But 6 or 8 months after the war ended, there were 14 separate wars going on in Europe because of how Wilson and the other leaders chose to draw the maps. It was a complete mess.
And so, Jim, what is your solution to this? Do you have a direction to go, something to do, something in Congress? I mean, what kind of advice would you have after studying this and looking at this to try to prevent some of this from happening in the future?
Well, you know, there's a very good thing in the Constitution. It's called the Congress has the power to declare war. It's important to end presidents' right to send troops anywhere they want in the world to fight on any pretext. U.S. troops are now fighting in 14 different nations. Most Americans don't even know that. So the most important thing is to take politicians off the pedestal and end their power to send troops anywhere on any pretext.
And I got to ask you, sir, President Trump, now President Trump, then candidate Trump, during his campaigning for the presidency, started speaking a lot of sort of non-interventionist rhetoric. And it almost got dangerously close to full-on isolationism, which, to be frank, I really appreciated. I appreciated it from a constitutional perspective. Now, it seems like Trump got there by way of an economic perspective. It was just bad business. Now, either way, I don't really mind as long as we fall on the same page. I would prefer to go through the constitutional route. With all that being said, though, in all sincerity, sir, do you think we would ever get anywhere close to repealing that War Powers Act? Because we haven't declared war since World War II, and that's a problem.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it would be such a novelty to make the president obey the Constitution. I'm willing to take that chance.
Right.
And that means any president, Trump, Obama, even George Bush.
Now, what do you say to the sort of devil advocate that would say, no, you all are just being way too idealistic. The real world does not operate this way, all right? It's fine to get up there and talk isolationism during a campaign, but once you sit in that Oval Office and you deal with the generals and you deal with the military telling you what's really happening on the ground, you don't have another option but to play the real world game.
Well, I was not talking in favor of isolationism. But if you look at the records of the wars since 9/11, things are still going to hell in a handbasket in Afghanistan. Trump seemed to understand that before he became president. Things are not going that well. Things are going horribly in Syria, though not quite as bad as they were at the time Trump took office. There are all these messes. We are not able to fix things. Mm. So bring the troops home.
I completely agree with you there. Honestly, I've always said, too, if the day that Bernie Sanders comes out and says, let's bring all our troops home and then reallocate that spending to college funds, so free college forever, I don't know if I'll have a weird sort of paradox that I'll be stuck in. But so we got to hit the first break here. I was wondering if you could do possibly one more segment with this. I want to be respectful of time, but did
sure.
have a few
sure.
follow-up questions.
That.
Fantastic.
Sure.
I'll put Jim Bavar back on hold. 8:47 in the morning. Hit this first break and be right back.
From the FMT Insurance Studios of Talk Radio 92.3 and AM 760, this is Real News
with Mr. Henry and Nick Crawford.
Join the conversation on the Crown Plaza call-in line, 865-888-TALK.
In the morning. Welcome back to Real News, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Mr. Henry. Nick Crawford sitting beside me, joined by Jim Bavar, the author of 10 other books, including Public Policy Hooligan, Attention Deficit Democracy, Bush Betrayal, Lost Right, Destruction of American Liberty, written for New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Playboy, Washington Post, New Republic, a slew of others. And, sir, I started out this interview by saying that this headline here from Mises on Veterans Day, remember the lies that filled military cemeteries, could be fairly controversial depending on how one would take that either in or out of context. So let me ask, I would presume that the attention or guilt or blame is not directed at all towards soldiers that are called into action. It is those that are doing the calling. Is that correct?
Right. And to put this in perspective, there was a story I had in the Baltimore Sun a couple days ago, on Friday actually, on how I was hitchhiking through Baltimore and ended up going to the bus station. Hitchhiking went bad. Met a drunken Vietnam vet and ended up sitting next to him for a bus ride to New York City. And he was a complete wreck of a guy who had been healthy. And in those 4 hours, I heard him pour out his heart about some of the atrocities he had committed in Vietnam, including shooting a 10-year-old girl who he thought had a hand grenade, but she didn't, and he was haunted forever by that. And what the politicians have done in Vietnam and after 9/11 was put American troops in atrocity-producing situations where they can't tell who's their friend, who's their enemy. And as a result, a lot of bad things have happened, and that's part of the reason a lot of soldiers have got PTSD at this point.
And let me ask you as a follow-up question, too, the
sure.
PTSD, and maybe you go down at the end of the article here as well, saying the best way to honor veterans is to cancel politicians' prerogative to send troops abroad to fight on any and every pretext. But let me ask you, sir, what do you do with a situation like right after 9/11? And I don't have the public polls in front of me, but I would have to assume they're somewhere close to, what was that back then, 70, 80, 90% almost of the country that wanted, it was a sense of vindication, of retribution almost. Do you know what I mean? What do you do
Absolutely.
With public polls like that? And do we just have to sort of stuff that down and say, I'm sorry, the Constitution is what it is, regardless of how you feel about this?
No, it's not necessary to do that. I mean, if you look at the 9/11 attacks, it was one specific terrorist organization who had, according to the current official story, had carried out the attacks. And we knew a lot about them. We knew where a lot of those folks were hiding. Self-defense, U.S. was justified in going after the bin Laden and his group ASAP. The Taliban is a whole different case because the Taliban had not attacked us, but I think the George Bush administration wanted to occupy Afghanistan as a way of kind of macho or for other things. But then we send our troops there, and at Tora Bora, we simply let the top people in the terrorist group escape. It's like, then why were we there? And then, it's a stand-up for women's rights and democracy in Afghanistan. How'd that go?
Yeah, see, I'm starting to understand where you're coming around to now. You're advocating just for getting it right ahead of time, which is a very novel perspective, right?
Well, I mean, it's been 17 bloody years
right.
Here in Afghanistan. U.S. generals will say, well, we're not going to win. I mean, things are so corrupt there. And we made it worse, but I mean, it was going to be a mess even before we got there, and it's going to be a mess after we leave. So, what's the point? And, I mean, there was a U.S. officer from Utah, I think who had been a local politician, who was killed there by an Afghan guy who was training a week or two ago, and there were all these articles praising him for his service and his visions and ideals and how he wanted to help the Afghans. Folks, this is BS. Mm. Let's get the troops out of there. Mm-hmm. It's a waste of time to have these, to have all these tear-jerking tributes for men and women, soldiers, who should not have been in the place where they were killed.
And let me ask you this, too, that assuming that you probably talked to many different veterans and have talked to people that have come back from war, is PTSD, is that the number one cause of homelessness and drunkenness or is there something else? Is it when they get here something happens, or is it from what happened while they were overseas, or is it just a grouping of all of it? What do you think makes a lot of these vets be in the situations that they're in?
That's a great question. I have talked to quite a few vets. I've heard from a lot of vets who got PTSD, how it's messed up their lives. Some of them have talked about the horrors that they saw or horrors that they had to do in the military and how that shaped them. I don't know what the answer is to your question. It's a great question, but I'd be lying if I said I had the answer.
Let me ask this, then. Let's rephrase a little bit.
Simplify it. I appreciate that.
Having talked to those vets, do they tell you what they wish they could have as help, something they think themselves might help them. So maybe if we don't know what the problem is, what would even be a minor solution?
You know, different guys have thrown out different ideas. There's not been any single thing which they've put on the table and said, hey, this is what we need. But what I've heard from many of them is that they're anxious for the U.S. to stop doing the foreign interventions, the pointless foreign deployments. Mm-hmm. Even if soldiers aren't killed or wounded there, it very often wrecks their family life at
sure.
home. Folks. It's sad to see here in Washington, the pundits who are most venerated are those who are most gung-ho pro-war, and almost all of them have never served in the military. Most of them have never even been in a bar fight.
And we have about two minutes left here, sir, and I want to ask you on the way out. You write in this piece here, again, from Mises, President Bush justified invading Iraq in 2003 because of Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction. The W&Ds were never found. So Bush claimed the U.S. would bring democracy to Iraqis, but the U.S. government helped rib subsequent elections and supported Iraqi rulers' brutal repression of their opposition. I don't want you to think that you're on InfoWars with Alex Jones here, so I don't want to get too too conspiratorial. But what do you make of the false flag policies all the way back to World War One with the Lusitania, World War Two with Pearl Harbor, even Spanish American War, and into the 9/11 nonsense? What do you put any credence in that at all?
Well, you know, to be honest, some days I almost get cynical.
Mm. I hear you. You and me both there.
No, I mean, excuse me. No, there have been so many things in U.S. foreign policy where we find out 6 months, 6 years, 10 years later that the official story was BS.
Mm.
And that doesn't mean that all official stories are BS. But the point of the article is that we should not blindly trust presidents, because lying about American wars is a venerable presidential tradition. Presidents have been doing this since Wilson, actually going back a whole lot further. And so, you know, sometimes, you know, every now and then there are presidents who have told the truth about foreign policy. But there aren't any that have made it a habit.
Mm. That's an interesting way to put that. And, sir, on the way out here, about 30 seconds left, give our audience real quick a place, the best spot they can go to, either Facebook or Twitter or website, to get more information on you, your books, your articles, things like that.
Oh, thanks. Best place to start is jimbovard.com, B-O-V-A-R-D. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, a bunch of other places, usatoday.com. So, you know. I'm around. I'm here.
Awesome. Sir, thank you so much for giving us a bit of your time this morning. Always appreciate your insight and intellect, and we look forward to talking to you soon.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It was fun.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. 8:58 in the morning. Hit this quick break. Stick around for news, traffic, weather, all that. Don't know what that looks about, Roz, but we'll be right back.